Okay, well, I am so excited to be back here with you today. I live up in Waynesville now. I moved there a year and a half ago from Oregon, and I go to the Creative Thought Center. You guys are as crazy as we are up there. We get up and dance and all kinds of stuff. And yet, it's okay because some people don't want that. So I understand why you sit way back there. No one will make you dance. It's fine either way. So I want to start with a story. There was a man named Walter. He lived in Tacoma, Washington. Walter had just outlived his third wife, and they had been married for 52 years. After the funeral, someone came up to Walt and said, "It must be really hard, really difficult to lose your best friend like that." And Walt said, "Well, yeah, of course it was, but maybe it's all for the best. You know, she kind of petered out on me after the last 20 years or so. Never wanted to do nothing. She was a stick in the mud." He said, "I told my wife we ain't seen nothing except this beautiful Pacific Northwest." They lived in Washington State. And he said, "I want to do something more." And she said, "Well, what do you have in mind, Walt?" He said, "I want to buy me a motorhome, and I want us to drive all over the 48 contiguous states." She said, "You're crazy, Walt. We'll die out there, and there won't even be a funeral homes around or anything." She told him she's crazy, and who's going to drive this? And Walt said, "Well, I am, Lammy Pie." She said, "You'll kill us." Well, the friend asked him, "Well, oh," he told his wife, "I want to make footprints in the sands of time while I'm still here to do it." "And you can't make footprints in the sands of time if you're sitting on your butt," he told his wife, "unless you want to make butt prints in the sand of time." So his friend said to him, "Well, you know, now that your wife is gone, what do you plan to do, Walt? What's your plan?" And he said, "Well, I buried the old gal and I got me a motorhome." He said, "It's 1976 is when this happened." He said, "I'm going to drive all over the 48 states celebrating our bicentennial." And he actually did make it to 43 of those states that year, selling curios and souvenirs, things like that. And he was actually 104 years old by this time. Not too long, maybe a couple months after he bought that motorhome and about 6 months after his wife was buried in the ground, he was seen driving down the road with a very attractive 60-something-year-old woman. And he told his friends that she was my lady friend, and we are romantically involved, if you get my drift. His friend said, "Now, Walt, there comes a time in a person's life when you got to knock that stuff off." Walt said, "Well, why?" And his friend said, "Well, because that kind of physical exertion could be hazardous to a person's health." And Walt thought about that for a little bit and shrugged, and he said, "Well, if she dies, she dies." So Walt knew what it was to be fully alive, didn't he? He knew how to really live. He lived fully. He didn't sit around and wait. 104 years old, most of us would probably be sitting around waiting for death's door to open for us. But he lived full out. He got his motorhome. He learned to live. He learned to love. He did everything he wanted to do. He embraced the cycle of life, and that's the title of my talk. He embraced the cycle of life, and he probably had a few aches and pains along the way, but I'll bet you he died with a smile on his face, you think? That reminds me of a joke about three guys who went fishing, and on the way back, they're all in their truck, and their truck crashes. They all die. Show up at the pearly gates, and St. Peter, is that the one that meets you up there, St. Peter? Yep. St. Peter takes him into a conference room and says, "Well, I'm going to ask you each a question." He says, "When you were at your funeral, looking over at your funeral, and you saw people around your casket, you heard what they were saying about you, right? Well, did you hear what you really had hoped you would hear from them?" And the first guy said, "Well, I heard them say, you know, what a great father I was. I loved children. I loved my children. I loved all children. But I was hoping I would hear them say what a great teacher I had been, because children learn to love school because I was a great teacher." The second guy said, "Well, I heard what a great husband I was, and I was. I was a faithful man, but I was hoping to hear what a great surgeon I was. I saved lives on this planet." They didn't say anything about that. St. Peter turns to the third guy, and that guy says, "Well, I heard that I was a great father and a great husband and all that, but what I really wanted to hear was, oh, look, he's moving." We all want to be alive, don't we? We all want to live forever. One of my main mentors is Mary Morrissey. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Mary Morrissey.
Yeah.
Yes, all right. All right. Mary used to be a minister up in Oregon. She had a very huge church. And she was talking to Robert Fulghum one day. Robert Fulghum is the author of All I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And he said, Mary, when you were counseling people as a minister, and when someone would come to you and say, oh, I just found out I'm going to die. He said, Mary, were you ever tempted to say, how did you get to this age and just find that out? I mean, it's kind of like we think that death happens to people on Dateline NBC and, you know, on all the movies, on TV and in the news, but not to us. We don't really want to connect it to ourselves, and so we put it out there. It's happening to other people. But it's going to happen to all of us. And there's no point in really fearing it because it's going to happen whether we fear it or not. And fear is just one of those energies that brings us down and keeps us from living fully. So it's a natural thing. We don't have to fear it. Some of you have probably heard of the dash, right? I'm not going to read the whole dash, but you know, when you see a tombstone and you see a date here, the person was born in this year, and here's a date, the person died here, and there's a little dash in the middle. Well, that little dash is what we do with our life. Our whole life is about living that dash, making it count for something. So I realize that the fear of death isn't always just the fear of death. It might be the fear of the process. It might be the fear of losing our quality of life. Might be the fear of losing our mental capacities, losing our dignity, losing our choices. I think we all have a right to choose how we will die as far as how much suffering we will have to go through. That's just my personal belief. Not everyone goes along with that. But, you know, there are certain rules out there, certain laws that will make some people live way beyond what they really want to live. There are hospitals. And what I learned as I was researching for my book is that if you're in a Catholic hospital, for instance, and you have an advance directive, they may not honor that because in the Catholic hospital, they believe they are. It is their God-given responsibility to keep people alive, at least with food and hydration, even if you have said you do not want food and hydration. So it's important to know what your hospital's policies are. I think grieving is a very important thing, and I'm not trying to glorify death by taking away our need to grieve. We do grieve, and it's healthy, and it's important to get that moving, to get that grief moving. I think it's especially sad when we lose a child. And that's actually what my book is about. I was in a meeting a few years ago and a young man stood up. His name was Gordy. He stood up and talked about his little boy, Andreas, who had died just a little while before them. Andreas was 7 years old. Now, Andreas had osteosarcoma. It was bone cancer. It was in his upper arm. And unfortunately, if a child is under 16, they don't have any rights. By the law, whatever the doctor says is the law. And so Andreas, being 7 years old, his doctor, I won't go into his whole story, it's only the first half of the book is his story, but there were a lot of mistakes made and there were a lot of threats made. The doctor said, I'm going to amputate his arms, part of his lungs, part of his ribs, give him chemo, give him radiation. And by that time, it had already metastasized throughout his body. Gordy, his father, had done lots of research online. He found at least 300 other children who had been in similar situations, and they were threatened that this is what we're going to do. And the parents didn't want to do it, but they went along with it. Every single one of those 300 children, 100% of them, died anyway, and they died a horrible death. There were cases he found where the parents were actually incarcerated because they didn't go along with the law, the doctor's orders. And so the child in the hospital would die and not even have mommy and daddy there because they were in jail. So there's a lot of inequality as to how we are allowed to die in this country, and especially if you're a child. And so during the few months that Andreas had left after his prognosis or diagnosis, they had to be running from the law because they were constantly being threatened by Child Protective Services. They were going to take him, make him ward of the state, and do it anyway. And so Gordy and his wife Joey, if they were going to lose his son, they at least wanted him to go peacefully. And so Gordy said finally to the doctor, isn't there some alternative That's the dreaded A word. The doctor said, you try anything like that, we will take him, make him ward of the state. We don't need your permission. We will do what I said we're going to do. So, you know, the last few months of Andreas's life should have been spent doing fun things that he could still do, what he could still do, and having closure. But it wasn't like that for Andreas. So without going into his whole story, there's one part of it that I really find so encouraging or so sweet about his story. Because I wrote his story really to open our hearts about this little boy and his story, but also to open our eyes as to what the law says we have to do sometimes. So at one point, his father managed to get him under the radar out of the country. Took him to China because he had a connection with a medical doctor in China who also did Chinese medicine and Qigong. And so this was Christmas time. Joey and the other two children, they couldn't all afford to go to China, so they stayed home. Gordy and Andreas got out of the country in the nick of time because as the airplane was leaving the airport, Gordy looked down and saw the very medical center that they were supposed to be checking into at that very moment to do this treatment. So anyway, they get to China. The next morning, the medical doctor meets them. He has two men with him, very old, old men who are Qigong masters. You all familiar with what Qigong is? It's an energy kind of thing, but they had really many incurable diseases of other Americans who went over there. But of course, Andreas was getting pretty too far advanced, let's say, for that. Anyway, they gathered around Andreas, and finally they bowed to him, and they left. Gordy went over to the interpreter and said, well, what did they say? Can they help my little boy? The interpreter said, they've identified your little boy as one of the ancient ones, and this is his soul's way of leaving. And neither your Western medicine of cutting people up and giving them chemicals, nor our Eastern medicine can make his soul stay. This is his way. And so eventually they came back to this country, tried a few more alternative things, but it was really too late. In Andreas's final moments, he was in a hospital by that time, had an oxygen mask on, and he took his oxygen mask off. And Gordy rushed over to put it back on, and Andreas took his daddy's wrist and said, Daddy, turn off my lungs. Turn off my lungs. And his very final words were, when the wind chimes, chime. And that's why I named my book, When the Wind Chimes, Chime. It's about ending the greatest fear of all, the fear of death. I wondered about that phrase because I remembered reading a book, and maybe some of you have read Danny and Brinkley's work. Danny and Brinkley, Saved by the Light was his first book, and he's written many since then. He had several near-death experiences. And I remembered that in his books, he always talked about hearing wind chimes when he had his near-death experience. And so I talked to Danny, and he said that when we are leaving this physical world, making our way to the other side, we go through what seems like a tunnel, looks like a tunnel to us. And he said our energy, our frequency, is acclimating to the frequency on the other side, and we hear it. He said, he had a couple of near-death experiences. He always heard it as wind chimes. Some people might hear it as angelic music or symphonies or whatever, but he says, I believe that Andreas was already starting into that tunnel, and he knew that it was his breath that was holding him in his body, so he had to remove the oxygen mask. So the rest of Andreas's story is in the book, but you know, I really didn't write the book just to tell a sad story. And it's a thin book anyway, but the second half of the book, I have short stories of people that I have known that really did come to terms with death and dying, came to a point where they were ready and they could go peacefully. Some of them had visions. My grandmother, when she was in her 80s, I think, she was in a nursing home. My mom went to visit her one morning, and my grandmother said, guess who came to see me this morning? My mom figured, well, must have been the minister of our church. Who else would come in the morning? My grandmother told her that she woke up early in the morning and there was a glowing figure at the end of her bed. And it was kind of beckoning her. My grandmother was not an overly religious person. You know, I grew up Presbyterian, and she was born in Sweden, as my mom was. So they went to church sometimes, but not overly religious. But she identified what she saw as Jesus. Could have been an angel, I don't know. But I think that really brought her to a place of peace. So as she moved into, just a few weeks later she died, I think she was able to maybe not have a smile on her face, but at least move peacefully through that process. I have a cousin who's still living. She's, I think, in her 80s. She lives up in Columbus, Ohio, and she's had many experiences throughout her life. But when she was a teenager, she went to bed one night. It was Christmas Eve. It was totally dark. And she knew that her grandmother had been sick, and she heard the phone ring in the other room, and she heard her parents talking, and she pretty much knew probably her grandmother had just died. Something compelled her name's Ruth, something compelled Ruth to get out of bed and go over and look out her bedroom window up in the sky. And she's not a woo-woo kind of person like some of us are. She's a down-to-earth person. She said she looked up in the sky, and there was her grandmother walking away from the earth, and on each side was a being of some kind, flanked by angels. I don't know. We don't know what it is, what we really go through, but these kind of things give me so much hope. Isn't it wonderful to think that we will have hope with us when we take that final time, final step? Also, in the second part of the book, I have, at the end of each short chapter, are a few questions for us to contemplate. I think it's important to know where our belief system came from. Maybe as a child, we weren't allowed to talk about it. I don't know, how many lost someone or even a pet as a child? Anybody here have any kind of loss when you were a child? Yeah, most of us did, even if it was our cat, our dog, our grandparents, great-grandparents. In some families, we were taught not to really talk about it, you know, put on a smile and look happy. In other families, there's a lot of grieving. And there's no right or wrong way to grieve. It's, we all do it differently. But sometimes we bring those beliefs and those feelings about death with us into adulthood. And sometimes it's, if we really look at the questions and think about it, maybe we're ready to let go of some of those. Maybe some of those beliefs no longer serve us. Maybe we can see, now that we're adults, we can see that death is and can be a beautiful part of the entire life cycle. So, I always find books about near-death experiences to be really comforting to me. Dr. Raymond Moody, anybody have heard of him? What? He's the one that termed made up the term, near-death experience, NDE. He also wrote a book about shared death experiences. It's called Glimpses of Eternity. And I love that book, too. It's got lots of short stories in it. A shared death experience is a little different from a near-death experience because someone else is sharing the person's experience who is dying. So in other words, a person might be standing next to the deathbed of their beloved, and when that person dies, this person, who's fully alive, finds themselves going into that tunnel for a distance with them. Sometimes, actually, they've been able to see the near-death, I mean, the life review that person is going through. They were able to see it, like a video. It's really pretty fascinating. If you get a chance to read Raymond Moody's book, Glimpses of Eternity, I think it really is fascinating for me, and really shows us that there's nothing to fear. That process almost always is peaceful. It may not be peaceful leading up to it, I understand that. But when we get to it, it's a beautiful, beautiful journey. But I also want to focus on life and living. It's not just about what we do when we're dying. It's about how do we live our life? What are we doing for our dash? It's never too late to create a life you would love to live. Walt Jones did it at 100, and oh, I forgot to mention, Walt Jones celebrated his 110th birthday on the Johnny Carson Show. I don't know if anybody remembers seeing that. I don't think I did, but he actually was 110 on Johnny Carson Show. And but he really knew how to be fully alive, didn't he? He didn't spend his life, he probably had aches and pains, don't we all? But he didn't spend his time worrying about what it's going to be like. He got his motorhome, he got his woman, he got his airtime on Johnny Carson. He did it all. So maybe you all have a dream. Sometimes our dream might be to travel. Maybe there's a place that really speaks to our heart that we haven't been to yet. Maybe it's just taking a drive in the mountain. Maybe some people think, oh, I'm too old. I don't have the money. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't have the means to go in the mountains. There's always a way. There's always a way. So if you still have a dream, maybe your dream is to write a book. Maybe your dream is to write your memoirs. Maybe your dream is to put all of your favorite recipes into a booklet and leave it for your grandchildren. Maybe it's to go fishing with your grandchildren. Whatever it is, it's never too late. If 110 is not too late, it's never too late. I'm just now getting my coaching practice going, and I'm 72. I'm starting the whole new next part of my life, and I'm excited about it. I changed careers when I was almost 50, and then again when I was 55, and then I moved from Oregon to here when I was 71, and now I'm starting a new business. And it's like some people would say, well, you're too old to do that, Donna. Eh, so what? I'm doing it. Today's the first day of the rest of my life, and it's the first day of the rest of your life, too, you know? Life is meant to be lived, and it's eternal. It's not going to be eternal in these bodies, thank God, but it is eternal. But while we're in these bodies, why not live fully? I had a friend named Ginny. Ginny was in my Toastmasters group. I was in it for 11 years. Ginny and her husband David had been in it for like 25 years. Every week they were there. 6:30 in the morning we had our meetings. And as David got on in his life, you know, he dragged in his oxygen tank and sat there and went through the meeting with us, even made his little 5-minute speeches. And eventually David died, and Ginny was a really upbeat person. She loved living, but she missed her David a lot too. She always talked about how she couldn't wait to be with David again. But she also loved life. On Ginny's 90th birthday, a whole lot of people of us got together in someone's home. They had a big home, and it had a pool out by the patio. And Ginny was in her finest there. She was dancing. Someone brought a guitar, and he was playing guitar out by the pool. And she's dancing all around, full of life. And we got to see pictures of her whole life and all the things she had done. It was like having her celebration of life where she could actually be there for it. And it was not too long after that, just a few weeks, I think, after that party, that she knew she was ready to be with David again. She wanted to dance with him. It was a day I was supposed to go spend some time with her in the evening, because we were all taking turns being with her so she wouldn't be alone. She was just starting to shut down a little bit. And I called her to ask if she wanted me to pick up anything to bring. And someone else answered the phone. It was a hospice worker. And she said, well, Ginny said she really would rather not have company tonight. She's just having a little bit of hard time breathing and just really would rather rest. So I didn't go. And I realized that I would have been there. She died that evening. Just let go. And she's dancing with David, and I know she was celebrating that because it's exciting. It can be exciting to know what's coming. I've often thought, what if we could handle our coming death as though it's a vacation? You know, if I'm planning to go to the Grand Canyon next summer, I'm excited. I can't wait to see what it's going to be like. It's going to be great. It's going to be beautiful. And I can do all these different things to prepare so I'm ready by the time I'm ready to go on my vacation. What if we thought about death that way? What if we could get excited about, wow? In fact, when I was a kid, my parents took me to funerals. I think I went to one, what do they call it, a wake. Nobody ever woke up, but they call it a wake. Probably, I never figured out that word. Probably once a year at least, we were off to the funeral home to see somebody in a casket. And usually it wasn't someone I was real close to. Sometimes it was. But I always used to think, wow, that must be the most exciting part of life. I mean, even when I was a little kid, I thought that. I don't know why I thought that, because I didn't really have that belief at those times. But something about it, I imagined that they were on a wonderful journey, because they sure weren't in that body that I was looking at in that casket. So I believe there's something within us that is greater than our circumstances. I think life is trying to express and expand itself through us. So while we're here, we need to live fully. It's not just our blessing to live fully. It's our responsibility, because we all came to this planet for a purpose, to live our purpose, to live our passion. I want to leave you with four things to keep in mind, whether we are 20 years old or 120 years old. Well, before I do that, let me just mention, I do have just a few books back there of this, and I'm not pushing my books, but if anyone would like them, they're back there. I also have a CD there. A few years ago, I asked, my boss is Neil Donald Walsh, and one of his books is called Home with God and a Life That Never Ends. It's all about the death process. And I asked him if he would let me record the concepts in there, in my own voice, on a CD. And he said, sure, go ahead. And I have a friend named Stephen Pike, who's a beautiful musician. He put his music, wound his music around the words. So those are back there also. It's all on one track. It's probably about an hour long or 45 minutes. And I think part of the reason I designed it was if someone is in hospice and maybe they're lying there, instead of having the TV blasting or whatever, if they could listen to these words, especially at the very end of the CD, it could actually take them right out of their body. At least I believe it could. So those are back there if anyone's interested in that. So four important things that will help us to live fully so that we can die with a smile on our face. Number one is forgiveness. And this is something all through our life we need to always remain in a state of forgiveness. How many have ever held on to a grievance or a grudge against someone? It might have been a little thing. It might have been a huge thing. You may have been abused in some way. Or you may just not like your mother-in-law or something. And, you know, it could be anything. And we mull it over and it just kind of, we think we got over it because we're not really thinking about it much anymore. But if someone mentions that person's name, it's like, yeah. It hasn't left us yet. It's really, I think, important to dissolve the energy of that. If that person is still alive, you might be able to approach them and say, you know, I was really upset by what you did, but I forgive you. I have to do this forgiveness. Forgiveness is for us, not for the other person. It's always for us, so we can it can release us to be free. The second thing is gratitude. Wake up thinking what you're grateful for. Go to bed thinking what you're grateful for. I have a whole group of friends, actually they're all women, so girlfriends, up in Waynesville. We go to the Creative Thought Center. I think we all are part of that community. And every day we have this group email we send out with three of the things we're grateful for today. It might be something that hasn't happened yet. Like, I'm grateful for the safe drive down to Franklin that I have tomorrow. Or something. Or it might be, I'm grateful for the phone call I had yesterday with my grandson. Anything. But just, it keeps you in that process of realizing how much we have to be grateful for. And we do. In this country, are you kidding me? We have so much to be grateful for when you look at the rest of the world. The third thing is joy. Joy is a powerful energy. It bubbles up. It just bubbles up through us. And we can find joy. I know some people think that joy finds us, that we have to have a reason to feel joyful. But I think we can create our own joyful feelings. Joy is something we choose, just as sadness and anger is something we choose. We choose all of our emotions, and we can switch back and forth. If you think about it, if you're thinking about something horrible that you would never want to see happen, and then someone says, now think about a rose, and you can make yourself think about this. We have the capacity to think differently. So think joy. And the last one, of course, is love. Love, that's all there is. Express love everywhere you go. Even just forming eye contact with that homeless guy sitting there asking for money or something like that. Just forming eye contact and saying, hi, how are you today? And asking their name. That can be a way of expressing love. And of course, we know there are many ways of expressing love. Love is who we are. My friend has a bumper sticker. It says, love is our sole purpose. Love is our soul, S-O-U-L, purpose. And so it is. So have a blessed day. Have a blessed life. Namaste.